Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. Today we're going to be talking about King Solomon.
King Solomon.
But not the Solomon you think you know. We're going to be looking at some surprising insights into his reign and maybe even unearth some cracks in the surface of this peaceful and prosperous era that we think we know.
Yeah.
So joining me today is...
Looking forward to it.
An expert on all things.
Appreciate it.
King Solomon, welcome to the deep dive.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
All right. So we're working with excerpts today from a lecture by Dr. Robert Bannoy.
Okay.
And he was speaking about the biblical book of Kings, specifically chapters 2 through 4 of 1 Kings.
Gotcha.
And these chapters really give us a different look at Solomon. I mean, the image we have of him is this incredibly wise and wealthy and peaceful king.
Yeah. The golden age.
Yeah. The golden age. Exactly.
Yeah.
But these chapters give us a sense that maybe everything wasn't as perfect and peaceful as we've always thought.
Right. Under the surface, there are some tensions bubbling up.
Some cracks in the foundation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so right away, we're thrown into this kind of mystery. Before David dies, he gives Solomon very specific instruction about three men, Joab, Barzillai, and Shimei. What do you make of these names?
Well, each one of these guys represents kind of like a loose end from David's reign.
Oh.
You know, he's trying to set things right before he dies.
Okay.
So, for instance, Barzillai, this guy was super loyal to David during Absalom's rebellion. And David basically tells Solomon, hey, make sure his family's taken care of. Honor his loyalty across generations. It's a pretty big deal. It's like a political debt of gratitude.
It's like he's saying loyalty has to be rewarded.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But then we've got Shimei. Now he cursed David.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other story. It's not just like bad manners. That's like treason back then.
Right.
So David had initially forgiven him, maybe thought it was like divinely inspired or something. But then on his deathbed, he tells Solomon, you know, deal with this guy. So it makes you wonder, did David have second thoughts? Like maybe Shimei was just trying to take advantage of a bad situation.
So we've got these two really different situations.
Totally.
Reward loyalty. Deal with the guy who disrespected you.
Right.
And it's interesting how Solomon handles it all. His half-brother, Adonijah, tries to make a move for the throne.
Oh, yeah.
What's the story there?
Well, he goes and asks for Abishag.
Abishag.
One of David's wives.
Okay.
As his own.
What?
Yeah. Now, back then, inheriting the harem, it was like a claim to the throne.
So he was basically trying to say, I'm the next king.
Exactly. Solomon saw right through it, though.
Yeah.
And Adonijah and his supporters, they're out executed.
So no messing around.
No messing around. Solomon's not taking any chances.
Wow. And what about Shimei? Did Solomon follow David's instructions there?
He did, but with a twist. He confined Shimei to Jerusalem. So imagine you're Shimei. You cursed the king, got away with it, and now you're under house arrest.
In the capital.
Right, in the capital. It's got to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, talk about living on the edge.
Totally.
And then Shimei messes up, right?
Oh, yeah. He leaves the city, breaks the agreement. And Solomon, true to his word, has him executed. No more loose ends. By the end of chapter 2, it's pretty clear Solomon's in total control.
He's consolidating power.
Yeah.
Now the lecture shifts to 1 Kings chapter 4, and we get hit with this long list of names, all these officials, and then Solomon's 12 administrative districts. And a lot of food.
A lot of food.
What's going on here?
It's like a feast every day.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just about feeding the royal court. We're talking 30 cores of fine flour daily.
30 cores?
That's like 5,550 bushels.
Wow.
And that's just the flour.
Yeah.
Plus, you've got all this meat, cattle, sheep, goats, even fancy stuff like deer and exotic birds. It's like Solomon's putting on this huge display of abundance.
It's interesting because at first it just seems like a king living the high life.
Right.
But I can't help but remember what Samuel warned the Israelites about when they first asked for a king.
Oh, absolutely. Samuel was like, look, a king's going to take your sons for his army, your daughters for his servants, your best fields, your crops, your olive oil.
Everything.
Everything to fuel his court and his wars. And it seems like that's exactly what's happening here.
So Solomon's actions, while they look impressive on the surface, they could be creating some problems down the line.
Absolutely. There's a potential for resentment brewing.
Okay, so you've got this potential for resentment.
Yeah.
And then things get even more interesting with how Solomon divides up the kingdom.
Right. So these 12 administrative districts that he sets up, each one's responsible for supplying the court for a month.
Sounds efficient.
Yeah, very organized. But here's the thing. They don't line up perfectly with the traditional 12 tribes of Israel.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And guess who's missing from the list? Judah Solomon's own tribe.
So he's not requiring his own tribe to contribute.
Nope.
Is that favoritism?
It definitely raises some questions. Is he playing favorites? Is it strategic to keep his power base happy? Or is it just a coincidence? I mean, who knows? But it definitely has the potential to create some tension among the other tribes.
So even in this seemingly efficient system,
right,
there's this potential for division.
Yeah, there's a crack in the foundation, even if it's not obvious at first.
And these cracks seem to widen when we learn about Solomon's military. I mean, I always thought of him as a man of peace.
He was, in the sense that he didn't fight a lot of wars.
Okay.
But he did build up this massive army, including a chariot force, which was a big no-no for Israelite kings.
Really? Why is that?
Well, Deuteronomy specifically says that kings shouldn't acquire a lot of horses. It was about trusting in God, not in military might.
So Solomon's kind of breaking with tradition here.
Yeah, he is. And not just breaking it, he's going all in. David had a few horses, maybe bending the rules a bit.
Right.
But Solomon's got a chariot force that rivals the Assyrian army. And they were like the superpower of the ancient world.
Wow. So he's making a statement.
Definitely. He's shifting from reliance on God to reliance on chariots and horses.
And it makes you wonder, is this wisdom or is it a dangerous departure from tradition?
That's the big question. And it's one we'll have to keep exploring as we dive deeper into Solomon's reign.
All right. This is getting good. We'll be back in a moment to continue our deep dive. Stay with us.
Okay, so we're back, and things are getting really interesting with Solomon. We've got this king who's known for his wisdom.
Right.
But at the same time, we're seeing these cracks starting to appear. Like, he's imposing heavy taxes.
Yeah.
Maybe playing favorites.
Right.
And building up this massive military.
Yeah, it's like this tension between what looks good on the outside and what's actually happening underneath.
Right, it's like a facade.
Exactly. And yeah, it really makes you question, what does wisdom actually mean in this context? Is it just about being clever and building up your power, or is there something more to it?
That's what I keep coming back to. Like, if Solomon is so wise,
right,
why are all these potentially problematic things happening under his watch? That's a question that Dr. Vannoy really grapples with in his lecture. He makes this point that even the most ordinary details, like these lists of provisions or how Solomon organized his administration,
yeah,
they all have a deeper spiritual significance. It's not just about the what, but the why behind Solomon's actions.
So we can't just take things at face value. We have to dig a little deeper and think about the motivations and the potential consequences.
Exactly.
So, like, give me an example. What's something that seems pretty straightforward, but actually has these deeper implications?
Well, let's take those extravagant provisions, for example. On the surface, it's a display of power and wealth.
Right.
But it also puts a huge burden on the people.
Right, because they're the ones who have to supply all of this.
Exactly. And remember what Samuel warned the Israelites about. A king would take their best fields, their produce, their labor.
Yeah.
It's all coming to pass.
Yeah.
Solomon might not be intending to create resentment.
Right.
But his actions are definitely setting the stage for it.
And then there's this whole thing with the horses and chariots. I mean, Deuteronomy specifically forbids Israelite kings from acquiring large numbers of horses.
Right. It's all about trusting in God, not in military might.
But Solomon seems to be ignoring that.
Yeah, it's like he's saying, I don't need to rely on God. I've got my own army now.
So he's not just breaking with tradition.
Right.
He's actually contradicting a pretty clear commandment.
Exactly. And it's a huge shift in the way that Israelite kingship was supposed to function.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be different from the surrounding nations, relying on God for protection and guidance.
Not on military power.
Right.
Sure.
But Solomon seems to be blurring those lines, and that could have some serious consequences, not just for him personally,
but for the entire nation.
Exactly.
And what's really striking to me is that all of this is happening during a time of peace.
Right. It's not like he's building up this massive army because he's constantly fighting wars.
It feels more like a way to project power.
Right, like a preemptive show of force.
To intimidate anyone who might think about challenging him. So even though Solomon is known for his wisdom,
right,
his actions are raising some red flags.
Definitely. And I think it's a good reminder that even the smartest people,
yeah,
can make bad decisions, especially when they're focused on power and security.
Right. It's easy to get caught up in the moment and lose sight of the bigger picture.
Exactly. And right, that's what we see happening with Solomon. He's so focused on securing his kingdom and projecting an image of strength
that he might be unintentionally sowing the seeds of his own downfall.
It's a classic case of be careful what you wish for.
Right, because you just might get it.
Exactly.
And in Solomon's case, what he might get is a divided kingdom and a legacy that's far from the golden age he was hoping for.
And that's what we'll explore in the next part of our deep dive, the consequences of Solomon's choices and the eventual division of his kingdom. It's a fascinating story and a powerful reminder of the dangers of straying from God's wisdom.
All right. This is where things get really interesting. We'll be back in a moment to finish our deep dive. Okay, so we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Solomon's reign. And man, it's been a journey, right? Like, we started off thinking, oh, wise King Solomon, peace, prosperity.
The golden age.
The golden age, right? But the more we dig into these chapters of 1 Kings, the more we see that maybe things weren't so golden after all.
No, not really. I mean, there's this sense of impending doom almost. Like, you can see the cracks widening, and you know something's got to give.
It's like a ticking time bomb.
Exactly. And it all comes back to this tension between human wisdom and divine guidance. Like, Solomon's obviously a smart guy.
Right.
But he seems to be relying more on his own strength, his own smarts, rather than on God.
Yeah, it's like he's trying to build this kingdom
right.
based on worldly power and achievement, rather than on the covenant God made with David.
Exactly. Like, he's forgotten that the kingdom ultimately belongs to God.
And that's where the trouble starts, right? I mean, it's not just about the military and the horses and chariots. It's also about how he's reorganizing the kingdom. Those administrative districts that don't line up with the traditional tribal boundaries.
Right, that's a huge deal. I mean, those tribes weren't just administrative units. They were families, clans, bound together by centuries of shared history and faith.
It was their identity.
Exactly. And by messing with those boundaries, Solomon's basically messing with the very fabric of Israelite society.
It's like he's prioritizing efficiency and control over unity and tradition.
Right, like he thinks he can just re-engineer society to fit his vision.
But that never really works, does it?
Nope. People are messy,
yeah,
complicated, and they don't always fit neatly into boxes.
So what's the takeaway here? I mean, we've been talking about Solomon's wisdom.
Right.
But it seems like he's making some pretty unwise choices.
I think the key here is that true wisdom isn't just about being clever or strategic. It's about aligning your heart and your actions with God's will, even when it's hard, even when it seems counterintuitive.
So it's not enough to just be smart.
Right.
You have to be wise.
Exactly. And that wisdom comes from seeking God's guidance, listening to his voice, and trusting in his plan.
Because ultimately, lasting success isn't about building your own kingdom.
No.
It's about being a faithful steward of the kingdom God has entrusted to you.
Well said. And I think that's a powerful message for all of us, no matter what our role or station in life may be.
Absolutely. Are we making choices that reflect God's wisdom?
Right.
Or are we trying to build our own little empires based on worldly values and ambitions?
It's a question we all need to ask ourselves.
And it's a question that Solomon's story forces us to confront.
Definitely.
Well, this has been an incredible deep dive. Thanks so much for joining me today and for sharing your insights.
It's been a pleasure.
And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in. We hope you've enjoyed this exploration of Solomon's reign. And we encourage you to keep digging, keep seeking, keep asking those tough questions. And until next time, keep diving deep.